Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. Hope you guys are flourishing to the best possible extent you can under state and local law. Please email me your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. We've been getting such great response. I love hearing from you. I want to share with you something that has kind of been put into the media narrative that is so misleading lately. It's something that involves our language. It involves the narrative that's happening nationally. I was searching around on many different news sites, and I try to read at least 2 or 3 hours of news a day. I try to read news, not watch news. I encourage everyone listening to this to try to actually read the information, not just watch the information that you consume. Of course, you should be listening to the information here on The Charlie Kirk Show. But reading allows you to find the bias a lot easier, allows you to spot it, and allows you to expose it when you come across. So I was reading this story from the Washington Daily News. I hadn't really heard of this site before, but somebody sent it to me. And the title was this: Virus Creates Unprecedented Economic Woes. So I read it and I said, of course I agree with that. And then I took a step back. I said, wait a second. There's something really wrong with the description here. And so then I started to search around other articles. I found one on the Harvard Business Review that said, Understanding the Economic Shock of Coronavirus. And I started to search and I found article after article after article on Vox.com, on Washington Post, that said the economic pain of the coronavirus. But there's something so fundamentally wrong about this. Can you spot it? It's not the virus that is causing the economic pain. It's the lockdowns. It's our reaction to the virus. Now, the virus is causing death. The virus is causing physical pain, but it's our reaction to the virus that has actually caused the economic misery. I'm not the only person to point this out. Dennis Prager has also mentioned this, but I independently spotted it as well, where I noticed that the media and the activist media, they're trying to make it seem as if there was no other response that we could have taken in response to the Chinese coronavirus, that the only way that we could have possibly reacted was to shut down the entire economy. And so that's why they're using sloppy language here. And the sloppy language is actually giving license and actually giving permission to one of the greatest totalitarian power grabs in human history. This is giving them permission to do this again. Oh, the virus is creating unprecedented economic woes, Washington Daily News says. No, it's not. The lockdown is creating unprecedented economic woes. Did you know Denmark has now opened their schools a couple weeks ago? In what kind of backwards world should we as the United States of America allow and accept Denmark to be leading the world? Is that okay? We're allowing Danish socialists and collectivists to really be the leaders of individual liberty and freedom? There's a couple reasons for this. First of all, I understand the left better than most. I fight the left. I'm attacked by the left. I organize against the left on high school and college campuses. I understand what drives these people, whether it be a professor, an administrator, a pundit, or someone with a blue check on Twitter that has far too much influence for whatever reason, whether they're a celebrity or someone that used to be part of some sort of rock band in the 60s and 70s that no one even remembers anymore, and Twitter decided to verify them for whatever reason. Leftist leaders love unearned moral superiority. Leftists love to be able to call the shots. They enjoy to be able to feel better than you. And it's not just leftists. It's it is embedded in human behavior, but it's natural within the furthest extrapolation of leftist governance. Is liberals will try to say, you cannot do something, and that gives them a sense of moral superiority. This is exactly why Mayor Eric Garcetti or Gavin Newsom is continuing to push forward with these draconian, backwards, anti-freedom shutdowns. The same can be said for Governor Gretchen Whitmer, where they are restricting liberty and restricting freedom because they love unearned moral superiority. No one actually gave them that power except for electing them. But there wasn't a referendum between when Gretchen Whitmer ran for the governorship in Michigan. It wasn't a choice between let's keep Michigan open or keep Michigan closed. It was around different issues, education funding, rebuilding schools. The Flint water crisis had something to do with her victory. But as the left has been given this moral superiority, they think just because they've been elected, they have a license to violate your natural rights. This is nonsense. This is nowhere in the American compact of governance. And so when we talk about the virus, we have to differentiate the virus and the lockdowns, because the lockdowns are now being exposed as not working. The data and the science and the statistics and the math are actually showing us that states like Georgia and Florida that have reopened their economies, they're seeing their infection rates go down and their death rates go down. We have been lied to. And I encourage you to go back to our previous episode with Senator Rand Paul, where he challenges Dr. Anthony Fauci on a lot of his prognostications and a lot of his predictions and a lot of his incorrect assumptions. There's been a huge cost to this. Suicide is up anywhere between 8 to 15%. We'll have the final numbers many months from now because they are still being processed and they are still coming in. Some statisticians estimate that the suicide rate has doubled, if not tripled, in certain counties and areas across the country. We know alcoholism is up. We know marijuana usage is up. We even know that the cocaine price has increased on the streets of New York. How they were able to find that number, it's probably too much information for us to be able to disclose here, because I'm just wondering how on earth we know the price of cocaine is going up without actually maybe arresting the drug dealer. Do we have some sort of investigative task force in New York City that is finding out the price of cocaine with, hey, whoever's giving that information should probably not be on the streets of New York. Just a fair assumption. But the lockdown is fundamentally and distinctly different than the virus. And some people say, no, they're directly correlated. That language is not done intentionally. It's just that sort of, that's semantics, Charlie. You can't dive too far into it. That is not correct. Because the virus is a biological threat to humanity. The lockdowns is a cultural and real threat to all civilization. And now we have seen with Sweden that did not destroy their economy. We have seen with Denmark allowing kids to go back to schools. There are many different ways that we could have handled this entire COVID-19 China virus pandemic. I heard someone that was running for the presidency of the United States, a Democrat, say, it does us no use and no utility to go back and to point fingers. What's done is done. This is one of the worst takes I have ever heard in public life. Saying what's done is done and there's no use in going backwards would basically invalidate the entire Department of Justice. It would invalidate us going after people that lie, cheat, steal, murder. Now, I'm not putting a moral equivalence between murdering someone and misrepresenting data sets. But I am saying that people did die and businesses were shut down and individuals did commit suicide and society was disrupted because of that. We should investigate the lies around the coronavirus just as much as we investigated the fake Russian collusion hoax around the president of the United States. Because unlike the fake Russian collusion hoax, this is real. We now know that the data was manipulated. We know that the science was altered. We now know that the scientific community was conjecturing and not being transparent with us, the American people, and the world community. And those of us that dared question or cross-examine the so-called experts were attacked harshly and repeatedly by that community. We must be very careful how we speak about language of lockdowns versus the language of the virus. It's imperative if we are actually going to find out what were the true motivations behind some of the statistics, some of the modeling that we were so dependent, reliant, and trusting of. We have an amazing panel coming up on the Charlie Kirk Show of a medical doctor and a statistician that you are going to really enjoy. Please email me your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, to ask them about this. Immigration is a massive issue in our country. In fact, I think it might be the number one issue in America. Restricting, of course, illegal immigration and legal immigration, which is why I've called for the total and complete suspension of all visas until we get back to pre-pandemic employment levels. And even when we do, I support Senator Tom Cotton's RAISE Act to be able to protect American workers and put our country first. There's one person that has been warning against the threat of legal and illegal immigration for some time, and that is Ann Coulter. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation with Ann Coulter. Please email me your questions so I know what you're thinking so I can ask our guests. Buckle up, everybody. I know you're going to enjoy this episode. And by the way, our episode is brought to you by PCmatic. You can go to PCmatic.com/Charlie. It's a whitelist next-generation antivirus software. They will build the wall around your computer, and we'll be talking about how we can actually build the wall in our country with Ann Coulter. Enjoy this episode, everybody. Here we go. Hey, everybody. So honored to welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show, Ann Coulter. Hi, Ann. How are you doing today?
Fantastic. How are you, Charlie?
I am awesome. Thank you. I have to first just compliment you. One of the books, one of my favorite books that you wrote, and one of the books that informed me the most about how the left and the Democrat Party operates, was the book Demonic, How the Liberal Mob is Endangering America. I remember reading it many years back, and I still go back and reference it because it articulates how the Democrat Party activates the mob. They depend on the mob. I think you even said they coddle to the mob and they celebrate the mob. And it's so, it was really prophetic and clairvoyant in some ways. So I just want to kick off our conversation today by thanking you because it really clarified a lot of how the American left operates.
Thank you. It's funny. I sensed that's what you were going to say, probably because we're in such a mob-like time. At the time, I was a history major at Cornell. I did to write that book. My argument is that the seminal moment defining the left versus defining the right, we are defined by the American Revolution. They are defined by the French Revolution. And I sent it to one of my French Revolution chapters, which is, you know, it's as if the Manson gang took over a country and they act like that has any similarity to our revolution. In any event, I sent it to one of my pals from Cornell, also a history major, and he emailed me back and said, how could the two of us have graduated from an Ivy League institution, both majoring in history, and this is coming as news to both of us? And that's why I put in the book, I looked up various universities. I looked up a lot. I'm not sure how many I put in the book. But Harvard, I think, was the only one of the Ivy Leagues that had anything that could possibly include the French Revolution. I mean, there ought to be course after course after course specifically on the French Revolution. There are some wonderful historians, surprising lefties, who have written some great books on the French Revolution. When historians are historians, that's what they do. But I do think that's an important book for people to understand, and you know it's important because of the way the French Revolution is hidden from us.
Completely. I found it to be so instructive because you're able to see what the left is going to do before they do it. And I love the contrast between the French Revolution, the American Revolution, and one of the founding ideals in the French Revolution, as they said, was fraternity, which basically means socialism, if you kind of translate the linguistic translation to it. And it was a completely different type of revolution. It wasn't run around natural rights or about sovereignty. It was one about building a commune and just complete revenge and mob politics. So I want to talk to you about another book, Anne, that has also really informed me around the issue of immigration. I have long been an illegal immigrant border hawk around building the southern border wall and allowing ICE to do their job and deporting, individuals that have broken immigration law. And you know, like some people in the conservative movement, I have really intensified and clarified my position on even legal immigration and saying that we need to be just as serious with restricting visas and also how legal immigration can be equally as harmful. You wrote the book Adios America. And with the coronavirus spreading, you know, and kind of the pandemic, I think has clarified a lot of people's thoughts on this topic. You talked about in Adios America about how immigration is the number one issue in America. You touched the third rail in American politics. Can you comment on this? Because you attacked the immigration issue.
Yes, and by the way, you're not alone. You just reminded me in Mickey Kaus's review of my book, I made him review Adios America. He talks about how he always thought the people from, I forget what it was CIS or Numbers USA, how it wasn't just illegal immigration. They threw legal immigration in too. And he said, I think I have it linked on my webpage. He said something like, I always thought they were weird. Why would you throw in legal immigration with illegal immigration? And then he goes on to describe, as I in a review of my book, as I do in my book, I mean, if you care about the working class, driving down wages, defending the culture, defending the possibility of Republicans winning elections, the difference in legal and illegal immigration really doesn't make a difference. In fact, legal immigration is worse because they're voting right away. They're accepting welfare benefits right away, taking jobs right away. And nothing against the immigrants. Liberals always do this with arguments. They try to turn an argument about a government policy into, you're hurting these specific people. Well, I say, you're hurting these specific people. And they happen to be overwhelmingly the Trump voters, also Republicans themselves. But we've especially seen, I assume a lot of people listening to your podcast care whether this country becomes Venezuela, whether there is any possibility of a Republican ever winning another presidential election. And, you know, the left, the Democrats have openly admitted this. We've refused to believe them. As Maya Angelou says, when people tell you something about themselves, believe them. Okay, well, Democrats for 30 years have been saying, ha, 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 we're going to have hegemonic control of every election in this country by the process of immigration. We're just going to keep bringing in the third world, keep bringing in the third world. Nothing against third worlders, wish them the best, but it is simply a fact that every immigrant group votes overwhelmingly for the Democrats. I love, admire, and want to honor the Hispanic Republicans, the African Republicans, the Muslim Republicans. Love them. But looking at this from the perspective of how Republicans are going, what kind of country this is going to be in 20 years, 30 years, maybe even 10 years, it makes a huge difference that we are bringing in Democratic voters. And the RNC, I mean, I used to say, after looking at this, to write Adios America, I no longer care where a presidential candidate stands on one issue or another. I just want someone who can do math. Because if you are bringing in immigrants who vote 7-3 against you, 8-2 against you, if they vote 51% against you, you're losing. And there is no immigrant group that's even coming close to, you know, splitting their vote 50-50. Now, eventually, I think we'll get them. We got the Irish. We got the Italians. Eventually, we win them over. But this is a pattern for pretty much all immigrant groups. Perhaps not that surprising. We're the freest country in the world. Most of us, despite the Chinese-style brainwashing from K through 12 and then through college, most of us have some, you know, sense of where our country came from and the importance of freedom and free speech and individual rights and religious freedom. It's in the air. We get it from our parents. If we don't get it from the schools, we get it from books. We get it from parades. So basically, by definition, any immigrant we bring to America is going to make us less free or bring in a voter who will vote for less freedom. That's certainly what the polls show as well. It's not good. This is why immigration is the most important issue, because it will determine every other issue. And I'll just conclude that little speech by saying, look at California.
Yeah, and Virginia, you have me convinced of that. And to kind of give more context, we can't have self-defeating principles. And so I think a lot of conservatives and a lot of Republicans would agree the American left and what they want to do to our country is a force of malevolence. They want to get rid of our First, our Second, our Fourth Amendment, the Tenth Amendment. And so why and the where I now see it more clearly, and thanks to you, than I even did a couple years ago, is that if you believe that the left is a force of malevolence, which you articulated very well in Demonic and Mugged and your other books, then if the numbers show that a certain policy is giving potentially more power to that threat of malevolence, shouldn't that policy be reconsidered or stopped altogether? And that is how I...
Exactly. Yeah. Beautifully put.
Yeah.
Matter how, it's not as if... it doesn't matter what reason immigrants or anybody else has for voting for the Democrats. Maybe they just want more welfare. Maybe they just want to make it easier to bring their cousins here illegally. Whatever their reasons are, they are empowering, as you say, a political party that hates it, by and large, hates historic America. I can give you a million examples, would like to change this into a different country where they are on top, very unequal in terms of wealth. I mean, it'll look a lot like, I'd say, Brazil, but a lot like California, the very, very rich at the top, the rest of us, their servants. We will not be celebrating patriotic American holidays. It will be, the Wall Street will have free reign. Do not be fooled by any populist talk from the likes of Elizabeth Warren. No, if someone like Warren or Sanders ever got in, and actually any Democrat, it'll be hands off Wall Street, but pedal to the metal on transgender rights and, you know, identity politics and turning this group against that group, which is so not our history. It actually becomes much more divisive, much more racist and ethnically divisive, mm-hmm. the way the Democrats would like to order society. And that is what they care about. They care about identity politics. They may talk a good game on economic populism. Oh, no. When they're in power, none of that ever seems to get done.
And they actually
a bill to prohibit saying Wuhan flu or Chinese virus. No, that's before the Senate right now.
And they actually don't even care about the immigrants as human beings. They care about them as voters. And that has become so clear.
Yes.
Is that they couldn't care less about their well-being. If they just get addicted to government and vote the correct way, they will leverage that. But it's not just the Democrats. And this is something that I have run into a lot in recent years. And again, you have helped inform me to be even more vocal and more articulate and rational on this. I run into this a lot. I don't think I'm going to run into it very much in the near future because of the pandemic, but it's going to come back. Mm-hmm. And where people in the Republican business community, and I hear this quite often, they say we need a certain type of immigrant because Americans won't do those jobs. Can you help respond to that? Because I hear this a lot, and farmers even say this to me. I think our audience would be really blessed by your response to that.
Yes, a couple of points. One is... a lot of us get taken in by this too. It's very frustrating and always kind of surprising that these people who, you know, you're shoulder to shoulder allies with them on things like, the Kavanaugh hearings. It's the Wall Street Journal and Chamber of Commerce and, oh my gosh, they're so great on this issue and that issue and giving us more freedom in these ways. And then when it comes to their bottom line, no, we want more cheap labor. I will say one thing that is sympathetic to them, and I think this ought to be part of our response. Democrats keep acting for my entire lifetime, acting like they are our best friend, the best friend of the workers. I'm going to give you a higher minimum wage. I'm going to give you more, child care leave time. I'm going to give you... no children are allowed to work, or you must have X number of breaks. Well, every time they give American workers something, and making it easier for discrimination lawsuits and trial lawyers to bring all of their lawsuits, I will bet you lawsuits alone against American corporations cost them far more than labor. So I mean, I've always thought Republicans need to start pointing this out. They aren't, the Democrats aren't helping you, American workers. They're making you more expensive. And if you're expensive, they're going to outsource the labor or bring in Chinese or Indians to do the job instead. More pliable, probably won't bring a lawsuit, aren't American citizens yet. So, I mean, I think we can take away, but also give businesses something by taking off a lot of these regulations, rules, minimum wage laws that make it hard to hire an American, the union rules. But beyond that, farmers, I think it's time for them to realize we're well past the 19th century. In fact, in the 21st century, it is the only industry in America that hasn't discovered mechanization, at least to hear them tell it. Not all of them. It varies crop to crop. But no, there are machines that can do this picking. You don't have to keep harvesting the crops the way you did in 1790. We're about to get flying cars, and you tell us you have to bring in all of these peasants to be out working the fields. No, you don't. Now, it's one thing to say, well, I'm going to be patriotic and I'm going to be the only strawberry farmer who's going to buy these machines. But that's where you need a central government to say, no more cheap labor. You better figure out how to automate your business. And as for a lot of the Chamber of Commerce types, I mean, I just, not all of them, I'm sure there are probably a few who don't, who like our country. But I mean, for a lot of them, it's just they'll eat America dry and then move on to the next country. It is possible to shrink the overall pie of what people get in America while increasing your own slice. And that's what employers are doing when they're bringing in workers that are cheap to them but expensive to the rest of us, because we have to pay, to say nothing of the food, housing, medical care, throw in, you know, the crimes they commit, the anchor babies they have, the way they switch governments. I had a friend, this is just a perfect little metaphor and synopsis, had a really hot restaurant in a purple state, in a resort town, two hottest restaurants. And he told me that all of his busboys were Mexicans, most of them illegals, and said, oh yeah, these white kids won't work. They come in on their skateboards. I said, you know, come on, you're in a glamorous resort town. You couldn't get a white kid who's taken a gap year, but no white kid would work in a kitchen if he's the only one speaking English. Anyway, because of all of that excellent Mexican help, the purple state flipped heavily blue, Obamacare passed, and he's out of business now.
Well, I think that, and it all ties together, which is, the cost is also giving the leftists power, and that's not insignificant for those of us that know. I mean, there goes your First Amendment, your Second Amendment, the ability to protect your family, to go to church. You get a Gavin Newsom. You get an Andrew Cuomo.
Yes.
You get a J.B. Pritzker instead of a Ron DeSantis. And
oh, yes.
And so according to the Department of Agriculture, between 2014 and 2016, about 70% of the hired crop farm workers were foreign-born. About almost half were in the United States illegally. And we know the cost, we know the financial cost of illegal immigration, about $132 billion annually, and it could exceed $200 billion by 2025. But, Anne, you clarified that very nicely on the farming issue. But let's also focus on the high-tech visa issue. People say, Charlie, we need more H-1B visas for skilled labor, specifically because American workers don't have the capacity to be able to do this job, or we don't have enough of it. What's your response to that, Anne, when you come across that argument? Because I know a lot of people listening to this podcast are hearing that a lot as well.
Well, I have even less sympathy for for the tech firms, because they're not our allies on anything. So I'll just let it rip on them. No, this is indentured servitude, something that is prohibited in this nation. Why is it indentured servitude? It's not the same as slavery, but you are attached to a particular firm. Most of the H-1B workers, certainly in Silicon Valley, this has been written about widely, admitted on NPR by one of the Indian H-1B workers, I quote in Adios America, saying, you know, we're just doing standard programming work. Yes, of course an American could do this, but we're cheaper because we can't leave and go to a different firm. And again, oh my gosh, the cost can be enormous. They'll bring in the whole family. They're, you know, aging parents. Suddenly they're sucking in Social Security, and Chris Christie is telling us, oh, we have to tighten our belts. We need to means test Social Security. No, how about not letting tech firms, and every firm's a tech firm now, but bring in tech workers whom they can pay less to, and the tech worker can't go someplace else.
So
they're attached, the visa is attached to an employer, and even if it weren't attached to an employer, by virtue of being here, that puts them on the pathway to citizenship. Well, these aren't people, I mean, just by and large, overall on the entire immigration issue, this is, number one, just a government policy. We can change it any way we want to. I think we ought to change it to a way that benefits the people who already live here, including the immigrants who have come. When you're talking about immigration, you ought to be looking, I mean, I think any country ought to be looking around the world, picking the best immigrants we can get. These are the ones we want. We think they're going to fit in. They're going to learn English. They'll love our country. As Trump always says, I think that's a really beautiful line from him. We want them to love our country. These are the ones we're picking. Well, with the H-1B visas, with all these worker visas, we're not picking at all. We're outsourcing it to Microsoft. And what's their criterion? It certainly isn't, are they going to love our country? Will they fit in? Will they pay more to the government than they're getting back? No, their criterion is, will this save me money? Can I pay this guy less than I could pay an American? That's it.
And it might even be more malevolent for some of these tech elites, like Amazon, who owns the Washington Post. What if they know that they might be bringing in future Democrat voters? I'm not sure if it's that multi, you know, there. I don't know if there's that much of a multi-dimensional thinking, but I'm sure it wouldn't be.
I think it's more that they don't get attacked by lefties who pretend to care about workers,
mm-hmm.
right? They pretend to care about robber barons, but oh, they'll keep their lip zipped if they know this is bringing in them, their extra Democratic workers, or voters, rather.
Yeah, and one thing you said, Anne, that was interesting, but I want to challenge it a little bit, and it's not a huge disagreement, mm-hmm. is you said we might have a smaller pie. I'm not convinced if we restricted immigration that we would, because it could potentially keep the left out of power, which therefore would make more economic prosperity and bottom-up American-based entrepreneurship possible. And it's not as
Oh, you're right. That's a great point. You're right.
I don't want to totally...
Of course you're right.
I don't want to totally, let's just say, yield that argument, if we will, that just because of this we'll have less likely economic prosperity. So Anne, one other thing you talk about a lot is revoking birthright citizenship, of which I'm in complete support of. When I advocate for this on college campuses, it's not always received very well, of which does not concern me by the social justice warriors. But one thing that does make me pause is when people say it's not constitutional. Can you build that out of how it is constitutional to revoke birthright citizenship?
Yes, what they're referring to, and I do explain this in further detail in Adios America for anyone who wants it not just off the top of my head, but with footnotes. What they're referring to are post-Civil War amendments. These were all related to ending involuntary servitude. It was the freeing of the slaves. Even Justice Black, who was a Democrat nominee to the Supreme Court, former KKKer, even he said the Civil Rights Amendments are about Black Americans. That's it. And that's why the 14th Amendment is phrased in that sort of unusual way, referring to a person being a citizen in the jurisdiction where they are born, blah, 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 blah. The idea was we didn't want, you know, to fight this war, freeing the slaves, and then have the slave state saying, well, okay, you're not slaves, but we're not giving you the rights of a citizen. No, this would accomplish it once and for all. And it ought to, it ought to occur to most Americans, immediately after the Civil War, it takes a lot to get a constitutional amendment passed. You need two-thirds of the states, two-thirds of the Senate. It's a huge, there has to be a mass feeling about something. Why on earth, after the Civil War, would Americans be thinking, now, if a Mexican 8 months pregnant runs across the border, we want to make damn sure her child is a citizen? No, it's preposterous. It's insane. It was slipped into a footnote. It was not the official ruling of the court by Justice Brennan in 1980. He was a sneaky little Irishman. In the law, it's called dicta, and that is just like chit-chat in the opinion. If it doesn't have to do with the ruling, it's not legally binding. And yet, because he dropped this footnote, oh, and by the way, what did he cite? Did he cite a law passed by Congress? Why, no. Did he pass anything in the Constitution? No. He cited a book by some guy no one's ever heard of saying, well, if we make the children of legal immigrant citizens, what's the difference in doing the same for illegal immigrants? Oh, I don't know. Give me 6 hours and I could explain. But it has never been passed by a Congress that, yes, these are going to be citizens. The court has never ruled, yes, these are citizens. It's just something people do out of habit. I feel pretty strongly that if it went to the Supreme Court and it wasn't being decided 5-4 by left-wing zealots who don't care what the law is, I mean, Judge Richard Posner, for example, and he is no friend to conservatives, but he is a very, very smart, I must admit, Seventh Circuit judge put there by Ronald Reagan, but much more of a libertarian and libertine streak, I might say. Most quoted federal judge. Years ago, he concurred in an opinion involving an illegal immigrant for the sole purpose of calling on Congress to put an end to this nonsense, saying there is nothing in the Constitution, there is nothing in the law that requires the children born to someone who is in our country illegally to be treated as a citizen. Pass a law making that clear and end this nonsense. His point was all these people are streaming into our border 8 months pregnant, dying in the desert. You're creating a magnet for bad behavior that's leading to horrible, horrible outcomes. But also, I mean, it's just madness, like I said before, that we don't have control over who gets to come live in our country and be our fellow citizen. It's craziness that it's up to them, and they can play this game of Red Rover with the Border Patrol. Ha ha, ha ha, I dropped a baby, I'm a citizen, you can't throw me out now. No, it's crazy. I really wish Trump would sign an executive order, because it is just something in the air that people act like they have to do, but is not something they have to do, is not in the law, is not in a constitution, is not in a court ruling.
And it's also important to note that it says subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And many countries across the world have revoked birthright citizenship, or they would scoff or laugh at the idea of potential birthright citizenship, that you could just come on, I think they call it,
Oh, the birth tourism you're talking about, where the Chinese line, they have the hospitals, birth tourism.
Yes.
Yes, that is, they hide their pregnancies. There are lessons on how to hide their pregnancies.
Seriously.
They have specific, beautiful, yes, they have specific, beautiful hotels. This happens a lot in California. They'll be, you know, shopping down on Rodeo Drive, 8 months pregnant. They have specific hospitals for the Chinese ladies to go to, just so their kids can be American citizens and the whole family can come then.
And we need to treat citizenship as something very, very unique and special, not to be just given out haphazardly. And that is, I hope it's a lesson that conservatives take away from this conversation and more broadly, because when we don't think thoughtfully and honestly protectively over who are actually citizens of our country, things can get out of control very, very quickly. And so in closing, Anne, here, the coronavirus has, I think, really changed a lot in a lot of people's eyes. And now you see that immigration has been now ranked as a top two or three issue in certain battleground states. It certainly was there before, but I think it's even higher, especially towards the Chinese Communist Party and a lot of what the Chinese Communist Party has mm-hmm. been trying to do in our country. What specifically do you think politically, because you're very in tone with the base, do you think the president should run on to be able to contrast with Joe Biden and the Democrats, who basically their position is, let's just bring in as many people as we can from around the world as long as it benefits us politically.
Well, he has to do some things, but absolutely immigration is the best. I mean, that's how he won the last time. But to avoid cynics saying, yeah, you talk a good game, you never do anything, he's got to do some of this stuff. I mean, signing the anchor baby executive order, he's been promising to do that for 3.5 years now. It's important, not only that specific issue, but to lure the Democrats, as you say, Charlie, into running on a vastly unpopular issue. Biden,
can you talk about
the Democrats'
because,
position.
Yeah, pollsters, I'm sorry to interrupt, Dan, but just it's interesting the national pollsters and the intelligentsia that I run into, even on conservative Republican circles, say, no, Americans support more immigration. We need to be the pro-immigrant party. Can you comment on that? Because I run into that a lot, and I say, you're totally misguided, but can you comment on that?
Well, there's no evidence for it, but other than that, it's a good point. I mean, every time Americans have been allowed to vote on immigration, and it's probably at least a dozen times in the last 20 years from there are so many important propositions out of California.
I was Prop 187 in 94.
I was going to say that, but I've confused that with the affirmative action one.
That's okay. I get my 302s and my 203s confused all the time. So,
so Proposition 187. Four times the Congress has tried to slip through an amnesty, the United States Congress, in the dark of night. And what shut it down, it was never, you know, Fox News standing up saying to the ramparts, Fox News viewers, Fox News was all for amnesty. It wasn't even a whole lot of talk radio hosts. It somehow would get out to the people. And four times, both Republicans and Democrats have tried to slip amnesty throughs, and the American people have stood up and rejected. There have been a lot of immigration initiatives on ballots in this state and that state. They always pass overwhelmingly, even in states that are supposed to be, you know, the most,
English-only
ballots.
Yeah.
It's been going on forever. And we elected Donald Trump, who ran on building the wall. There are a bunch of liberals, I keep pointing out, Frank Bruni in the New York Times, smart liberals, Andrew Sullivan, New York Magazine, Thomas Friedman at the New York Times, begging the Democrats, stop being for open borders. This is 9-1 against us. Please stop doing this. Frank Bruni described it as the Democratic Party deciding they're going to be the antonym to Donald Trump. If Trump is for it, we're against it. So the Democrats realize this is a big mistake for them. To lure Biden, and it's not going to be very hard to get him to do anything you want, to lure him into coming out, making this election about immigration, is absolutely Trump's best path to victory. But he does have to do something. Otherwise, it's just going to be a bitter pill for at least some of his supporters that he keeps talking a good game and not doing anything.
Well, and I'll tell you that, you know, with 36 million people out of work, that luring Biden into that conversation, if he can have a conversation, which remains to be seen, will be awfully effective. So final question, Anne, which is just, you know, as we look at the immigration fight within the own Republican Party, the Republican Party and the conservative circles, as we start to try to, you know, talk about this issue, I look at it as it's either you can put corporate interests or a political party first or put your country first. And I can't remember where I saw this. I saw it a couple years ago, and I've been just repeating it. We're a country that has an economy within it, not an economy that happens to be in a country. Can you comment on that in closing?
Yes, and I mean, I'd say to the selfish businessman, what kind of regulatory environment do you think you're going to get in a country where a Republican cannot be elected president? You want to go take your chances with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, Elizabeth Warren? I mean, it's just crazy. They're like sharks, all appetite, no brain. Can you think ahead 5 years what this country will look like? Look at California. I mean, it's right in front of our eyes. We don't have to speculate. Look at Virginia. Look at New York. Businesses pulling out, people moving out. That will be the entire country if we don't put a halt on immigration.
Yeah, well, it's well put. And thank you so much for joining our program. We have to have you on again. And any book that we can promote to steer our audience towards, I know they'd love to help support you.
Well, I keep thinking, listening to both Fox and MSNBC, if you're bored with the Russia stuff, which I kind of am, I really think Resistance is Futile is the simplest, clearest, and funniest explanation of it, and then you can move on with your life. It's not just Russia, but the whole media Trump craziness and all you really need to know about Russia.
It's a good Star Trek reference, too. So, anyway.
Yes.
And God bless you. Thanks so much. We got to have you back at a Turning Point event once things reopen. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good to talk to you, Charlie. Bye-bye.
Bye. What a great conversation that was with Ann Coulter. I know I really enjoyed it. Please email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. I want to remind you of our sponsor for this show, PCmatic. PCmatic's competition is all made in foreign countries, many where the viruses originate. PCmatic blocks annoying and malicious ads for hassle-free web browsing and makes sure your computers are faster and more reliable, even after years of use. They are exclusive partner for this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show because they build the wall around your computer, and Ann Coulter is a huge advocate of building the wall in our country. Stop foreign actors from hacking our computers. So build the wall. That's what PCmatic does. It's PCmatic.com/Charlie. Keep your computer safe right now at PCmatic.com/Charlie. They block annoying and malicious ads for hassle-free web browsing. No matter what kind of computer you have, they can satisfy your need. Windows, XP, Windows servers, Macs, MacBooks, and Androids. $50 for 5 devices for 1 year with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And if you act now, PCmatic has offered my listeners a free month of security protection with the purchase of an annual license. Again, PCmatic.com/Charlie. Please email me your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. We have another episode we're going to do around this whole idea. But we have heard Rahm Emanuel before say, never let a crisis go to waste. And so if the left has long-held policy objectives that they are now trying to get put into law, wouldn't it be fair to logically then assume that if they have these long-held policy objectives they want to be put into practice and they see the crisis as a way to do that, aren't there some people out there that might be crisis seekers that actually might be seeking out a crisis to be able to implement their long-held policy objectives and beliefs? And if that's the case, will they actually be quick to stop the crisis when they know the data no longer supports it? It's a thought exercise. Think about it. And it might actually help you figure out who is on the best interests of our country, American sovereignty, and the future of American prosperity. I think it could be very, very helpful. Who are the crisis seekers? Who are the people out there that might actually be going out of their way to create a crisis? I think you know the answer to that question, and go back in the previous episodes of The Charlie Kirk Show to find out the answer to that question. Make sure you are subscribed to The Charlie Kirk Show. Type in Charlie Kirk Show. Please, right now, take out your phone and give us those 5-star reviews on your podcast provider. Hit subscribe and get a friend to do the same. Can you get one friend to subscribe to The Charlie Kirk Show? Just one friend to subscribe to The Charlie Kirk Show. It helps us surge in the charts, beat Joe Biden, and continue to be the fastest growing podcast out there around the ideas of American exceptionalism, a strong America, conservative values, freedom, liberty, and the American experience. I'm going to give away 5 more copies of my MAGA Doctrine book, New York Times bestseller, for free. All you have to do is say, Charlie, I listened to the Ann Coulter Show. I'm seeing your emails. And right now, we now have a pile of books that are going out. So you just got to email me, freedom@charliekirk.com, and say, I listened to the Ann Coulter episode. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. God bless.